couple of extra guests that wanted to be up here on this stage, so I couldn't say no to them after the performance they put on. And of course, Ray Everham, I had such a great time with him up on this stage last year. It was only fitting to have this guy up here because of what he's meant to this night. So that's why you got four of us.
All right, I don't even have to do my job. This is awesome. We'll start over here with Daniel, Kelly. We'll make the rounds.
Daniel McFadden with NBC Sports. Jeff, last week when you were inducted into the NMPA, you talked about the first time you got into a sprint car at 13, and you said it was the scariest moment of your entire career and the greatest. And I talked to your mom earlier, and she said that it was a conscious decision for her not to be present for that moment for her, because if she got scared seeing you scared, she might want to shut down the whole thing right then and there.
Yeah, she's a smart woman.
What were the conversations like with her in that time period in her career or in your career in order to ease her worries to let you race like that?
Well, first you have to understand John Bickford, my stepdad. And John, and this is, you know, I relate Ray and John in so many ways because they both had more confidence in me than I had in myself. And they you know, pushed me and talked me into being able to do things that even I didn't think that I was capable of doing. And one of those for John was that I could drive the sprint car at 13 and a half years old. And quite frankly, I couldn't, but somehow I did. And so he convinced my mom of that same thing. And I don't think she quite understood the whole the whole aspect of what all it took to drive a high-powered sprint car at that age. So, you know, John's a great salesman, and he believed in me, and some miraculous way it worked out. Not only did it work out that first time when we went down to Florida to drive it, but you know, it worked out the six, 7 years or whatever it was that I ended up, you know, 5, 6 years that I drove sprint cars. I never had an injury and, you know, won races, and it opened up doors, and it was absolutely the right move at the time for us. And so eventually she started coming to the racetrack once I got some experience, and then she was my biggest fan.
Kelly?
Kelly Crandall, Racer.com. Jeff, to your right. The wins, the championships, being credited with bringing NASCAR mainstream, Saturday Night Live, all the accolades, NMPA, tonight's Hall of Fame. Do you wash your hands and say, okay, I'm complete? Do you feel complete? Have you done everything and been awarded everything there is that we can give you? Do you feel complete?
Well, unfortunately, I can't go back and win a Sprint Cup or a Monster Energy Cup under the playoff system. We came close in 2015, but weren't quite there. I can't think of anything on the list. I'm sure if Ray and I get into it, we could talk about some wins that maybe got away that we could have won more. That's what's funny when I get with Ray. We're like, he starts reminding me. He's like, you remember that race? We should have won that race. So, you know, there's always more that you can accomplish, but I read a quote here recently. A man's reach is only as far as his grasp, and I've got short arms, so I'm always reaching for more. and it doesn't necessarily have to be behind the wheel of a race car. It's just pushing myself to be the best I can be, and racing has taught me that. Racing has given me confidence that I can do things I didn't think that I could do. As I mentioned with Ray made me believe that I could do more in a race car than I even thought that I was capable of doing. And because of the confidence that was built and the success we had, then I thought, okay, I can do that. Now let's strive for more. And I think that's where I am now, whether it be as a broadcaster, now as a businessman. My passion for the sport and what I may be able to contribute to play a role, whether it be, you know, the things I do at Hendrick Motorsports, things I do on Fox, or the things I do in meetings with NASCAR. I love this sport. It's a phenomenal sport, and it pains me to see that it's not at the level that it could be and that it once was, but I have every desire to help and play my role to see it get back there and maybe further.
Jerry?
Jeff, earlier tonight I was able to talk to Leo and Ella, and Leo told me he's excited for you, that he's so excited he could pop, and Ella says she is very proud of you. As you get older and they get older and they look back on your career, what is that going to mean to you, you know, 20 years from now when they're adults and they're thinking about my dad, when everybody accepts what you've done in this sport?
Well, the thing that was so important to me with them, and honestly probably kept me racing a little bit longer, because Leo was younger, you know, and he wasn't able to fully appreciate some of the moments. And even the wins weren't coming as often. We didn't win the championships. Ella was, you know, starting to get to the age where she understood it, if it was a good day or a bad day. So I was striving for more, and I had a great crew chief in Alan Gustafson in my closing years. I didn't have enough time to get into that in tonight's speech, but he's a phenomenal crew chief. And he, you know, was pushing me to get more out of myself and work harder at it in the closing years. And so I, because of that, and how, you know, the cars that we had, these guys were able to see some victories, and especially that one in Martinsville that they'll never forget. And as a parent, that's the most rewarding thing that you can be, you know, a part of and give to them. I don't know how that's going to mold them or what that's going to do for them into the future, but even tonight, I didn't know tonight would impact them the way that it did, but it had a huge impact to see their father up there on that stage, you know, with these other inductees, looking around the room, seeing the banners, and, you know, other Hall of Famers being introduced. I think that... I don't know, Dad might be just a slight bit cooler than he was coming into the night. And, I hope that, you know, the things I can teach them and the experiences that I've had and these experiences that we get to have together will catapult them into whatever they are passionate about, what they want to strive for, and understand the hard work that comes along with it.
Question for both of you, Jeff and Ray. You were both on this stage and at this event last year. How are the emotions different this year?
Well, the emotions for me were different because Ray was out on the stage and he started talking about me, and I was like losing it backstage because I look up to this guy so much. We work so much together, and you know, when you're in the heat of the battle, it's just fierce competition, and it's, you know, I need this to go faster, and he's like, well, you know, we're going to do this, and I need you to do this, and you know, so you have this business relationship. But now that we are apart from that kind of a relationship, now we reminisce. We talk about the great races, the ones that got away. I mean, this is just last week, man. We were out in the dunes having some fun and just talking about these things, driving Rusty Wallace nuts. He didn't want to hear any of these stories. But, you know, our friendship, I mean, Ray did something for me that he knows is a big deal, but he probably might not fully put it in perspective. He saved every checkered flag that we won together. And he put it in a chest and held on to it and gave it to me. How many years ago, Ray, did you give that to me?
Right after Leo was born.
Yeah, right after Leo was born in 2010. And, like, that's more than just a crew chief driver relationship. That's a bond and friendship you have for life. And it meant the world to me. And we've reconnected in a way over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. That makes me so proud, because I respect the guy so much, and he's having fun in his life post crew chief owner, and I'm having a blast post-driving, and some of these things we get to do together, and it's just so cool.
Go, Mark, and then...
Hold on, Ray didn't get the answer.
Yeah, I was just going to say, let Ray.
You know, it's last year, going in the Hall of Fame myself was, you know, a much different emotion, and I would have said that, you know, that feeling, you know, it was the greatest feeling of my life, career-wise. But tonight, you know, sitting there and watching Jeff go in, and, you know, I said this to him the other day, I don't know whether to call you friend, brother, son, because you've been all those things to me, you know, for so many years. You know, we've known each other going on 29 years, and, you know, we have connected, reconnected, but we always had some kind of a deep connection from the first day that we met, and to have him go up there so proud of everything that he's done and be inducted, but then to be so humble to be able to share with all of us like he did tonight. I mean, he's got me sitting up here right now with his children, you know, to make me feel so connected and be part of his great night. It just, as a friend, family member, it's a feeling I can tell you that I have not felt that for with anyone in my life. And it just makes everything that we did that much more special and that much more real, because our relationship is, I think, always been the biggest part of our magic, the biggest part of our success, and just the things that he did and said about me and for me, and watched him say about other people tonight, tells me that all that stuff is really real. Might have been, you know, 29 years ago, but it's real.
Mark Garrow, PRN. I've got two questions. First, for Leo and Ella, your dad just said, I think they think I'm a little cooler now after tonight. So what do you think of your dad going into the Hall of Fame, if that was pretty cool or not?
Yeah, it was really cool. I was really happy, and I cried when I got to hug him after he did his speech.
How about you, Ella?
It was really amazing to see how much he's accomplished, and it was really cool to see him get inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Man, like pros. Just like pros up there, guys. Great. You know, just dovetailing off of what Ray just said, when you guys first met 29 years ago, you know, it was for what turned out to be in your racing career is a little bit smaller. You know, it was just something, you know, it was just kind of a starter thing, right? I mean, you guys bump into each other. Can you comprehend now just that chance pairing turned into all this? Your thoughts about that first time, and then 29 years later, you're both in the Hall of Fame, the championships, and all the wins.
I'm a big believer that everything happens for a reason, even though we don't know all the answers to why those things happen. But what I can tell you, and I've said this many times, that the very first time I met Ray, it was just a connection of you. And I don't know, Ray, you can say better, you know, did it happen? It didn't happen when I had my briefcase and I opened it up and I had an open wheel magazine in the Game Boy. So I know that wasn't it. That probably scared him. But it was when I drove the car for him the first time at Charlotte at Tessa in a Busch Grand National car for Hugh Connerty, which was so cool to have Hugh Connerty here tonight. And, you know, I think that test, I mean, you have to understand how green I was in a stock car. I had no clue what I was doing, and I'm on a mile-and-a-half racetrack, you know, top speed, 170 miles an hour, whatever it was. It was fast. And you know, I was just, I didn't know the line. I'd never seen the track. And so I depended on Ray so much to help me understand what I needed to do. And then it seems like from the conversations Ray and I have had is that you know, the things that I learned very, very quickly, you know, he just had a respect for and the comments that I made back. And then I had this utmost respect for him because I had never worked with anybody that had a notebook and a setup sheet and all these details of a plan for a test. We would just go to the racetrack and throw a, you know, sway bar in and change a shock and just go out there and go. And this was the first time that I'd worked with somebody that was so organized and knew, it seemed, gave the impression to me that he just knew everything he was doing and why he was doing it. And so then I just went out there and assumed that the car was right and I better drive the car right because the car is better than I am. And I think, you know, for him it was, man, I better get the car right because this guy knows how to get the most out of it. So it was just immediate. It really was immediate.
I was fortunate. Not a lot of people knew my background, but I worked for several years at the International Race of Champions in the Penske organization, and I got to work with Andretti and Foyt and Unser and Earnhardt and Petty and, you know, Derek Bell and Jackie Ickx and Jochen Mass and all these great drivers, and had become accustomed to the way they talked and the things that they described. And the first night that we met was at a hotel, and Jeff did have his briefcase, and he was very organized. He opened it up, but it did have the Nintendo Game Boy and the Open Wheel magazine, some peanuts and things like that in it.
I don't think that my briefcase is a whole lot different than that now. It's just an iPad.
Probably not. It was we both kind of had the old Simpson carbon fiber briefcase, so that was cool. But I liked him. You know, I had seen him race on television. Knew a little bit about him and did some research, but I just liked the way he talked. You know, as I said, he was smart. He was very young, but he had a very high racing IQ, the way racers talk. And the next day we went to Charlotte, and we didn't have the best car. We had a car that had been a Buck Baker school car that Hugh Connerty owned. And, you know, we call Steve Barkdahl the Steve Borrowed-all because he set it up, and I think we borrowed everything we had from tools to tires and wheels and whatnot. But that day, when Jeff made his first laps on a track like that at those speeds in a car with fenders on it, you know, much different, sitting on the left, not in the center, and all those things, the feedback that he was able to give me, I was like, this guy is special. This is, you know, this is not your average run-of-the-mill guy trying to make it. This kid is special. And from that day, I've said this before, you know, the greatest gift you can get as a mechanic, a crew chief, is when you know that there's nobody on the planet that can make that car go any faster. And I always felt like that if Jeff had come to me and said, look, I feel like we need to cut the roof off this car and put it on backwards, that's what we would have done. And again, I always said, immediately identified that ability to describe exactly what that car was doing made my job easy. I always felt like if you can't be a winning crew chief for Jeff Gordon, you should turn in your toolbox.
We have time for one more, and we'll go with Lee.
Jeff, you made an effort to acknowledge the fans and the contribution that they had to your career. And I'm just curious, at what point during your career did you realize how much the fan interaction had to do with the building of the sport?
Well, it was always important. I mean, even when I was, you know, racing sprint cars and midgets, you know, in those types of forms of racing, you're unloading or you're loading your car up after the race in the infield, and people are walking through there, and you're interacting with them, and you know, maybe they're getting autographs or you're selling some T-shirts and hats to them. But of course, when I came to NASCAR, that was on a whole nother level. I think that Earnhardt is the one that really taught me the whole next level of that. And you know, he had such a huge fan base. And you look up to somebody like that. You look up to somebody and say, okay, if I can start winning races, then my goal is to start getting a fan base like that, because a fan base like that gets you to experience a little bit what it's like to be a rock star. Gets you, you know, to go out and be motivated by the cheers and the support that you get. And so I don't know if there was a period of time when I resented it a little bit because of the invasion of privacy and you know, the sport was blowing up, and I probably you know, didn't handle it perfectly because whatever reason, I was maybe a little arrogant at the time, you know, race, winning a lot of races and things like that. But I don't know, something hit me along the way, and I just realized, you know what, there's nothing too important, nothing that I can't take time out for these people that want a picture, an autograph. And I think, you know what I think the biggie was, is it just took me back to my childhood when I went to a sprint car race and I was getting autographs from the Kinzer family, not just Steve, as others, at a race in Putnamville, Indiana, and how that was so cool to me. And I hung those posters up on my walls, and then I met Rick Mears, who was my, you know, hero, which was so cool to see him tonight. And then I was that kid on the fence yelling, Rick, and he, you know, he came and signed a t-shirt for me at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So I always maybe just had that in the back of my mind of, I want kids. The adults challenge you, right? The adult collectors challenge you because, you know, there's a collector market out there and you're happy that that's out there, but it's the kids that want it because they just really love you, or they love racing, or they, you know, that means something to them. You know, you become, you know, something that maybe they want to be when they're going to be a race car driver, or they just think, you know, that this is somebody that would mean a lot, that they might hold on to. I met a kid tonight, and he works for NASCAR, or one of them NASCAR productions. He said, I got your autograph when I was a kid, and you're the one that inspired me to be in NASCAR. And I still have that autograph today. So when you hear those moments, then it makes you feel really good at the efforts that you put into it. So I thought it was very important, and I love that they invite the fans to this event. And, you know, I didn't hear enough of them throughout the night. And I wanted to hear from them. So I knew I was going to acknowledge them, but I wanted to interact with them a little bit, and it was great to hear that reception for them.
It's a great way to end, Jeff. Thank you so much. We have one last honor for you from Mayor Bob Sampayan from the city of Vallejo, your hometown. Names today, February 1st, 2019, Jeff Gordon Day in the city that you were born.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you. We'll go celebrate that here in a second. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.